This is Alex Wilton-Regan, and you're listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com. Don't forget your toothbrush.
Hey, welcome to the Rated NA podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode 128, and we have a special guest today.
We do. Alex Wilton-Regan is here, who you guys may recognize as the voice of Samantha Trainor in Mass Effect 3. She also is in a movie that just came out called Real Playing Game with Rutger Hauer, and Zombie Diaries 2 is now on American Netflix, and I just watched it, and it's pretty damn good. So she's in all that stuff.
That's awesome.
She was so much fun to have on the show, and I'm already kind of clamoring to have her back. I feel like you ever get done having one of these guests on, you're like, I want to hang out with this person and like go to the theater and like grab a sandwich. That's kind of like I wanted more.
Yeah, and you're not talking about the movie theater. You're probably talking about the theater.
I am talking about the theater. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. No, she was so much fun, so down to earth. Just a joy to have on the show. And she had so much enthusiasm and funny as hell, too. Absolutely funny as hell. Like some of the stories she told, like the story about the disgusting disgusting washcloth.
Oh, geez. Yeah, she's that fantastic.
That was like about as gross as one of the stories I tell. So I have utmost respect for Alex after that story. So,
oh, she was the best. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And oddly enough, this coincides perfectly with N7 Day, which just occurred earlier this week.
That's right. That's right. And I guess we should say that again, it is just Scott and myself, Ash, here today. Matt fell down a well while hunting ring ghosts.
Ringus.
Yes. And Hillary is, I'm sure, at a convention someplace doing something.
That sounds about right. That's a great alibi.
That's pretty much all I got for Hillary.
I think that explanation is on point.
Yes.
As they say.
Generally where she is at a convention of some sort.
So how was your N7 Day?
Dude, it's so sad. I had all these I was going to write an article about it. I was going to do all these tweets about it. I woke up with a migraine and it lasted like 15 hours. Yeah. And I had to teach with it, which was awful. So I came home and I my wife was laughing at me because she came home and I was on the couch in the living room with sunglasses on.
Oh, jeez.
She's like, what the hell are you doing? I'm like, I can't even open my eyes. So it was a bad one. So I spent most of N7 Day like in traction, feeling horrible.
Oh no!
What about you, man? What'd you do?
Let's see. Well, actually, N7 Day, oddly enough, is my wife's birthday. So
nice.
Yeah. So it's weird. I can't always celebrate N7 Day on the day, but I think sooner rather than later we should dust off the old Mass 3 multiplayer and check that out again.
Yeah, actually, I hopped on Xbox and I saw a lot of people, like Natalie was playing.
Yeah, I've been itching to play it again.
Oh, shit, I wanted to play with them so bad. But you ever have a headache so bad that you can't even like play a game?
Oh, I know. I know what you mean.
So I couldn't move, which was horrible. But yeah, I mean, it was I love N7 Day. I think it's a great movement. I think it's great to recognize, you know, one of my favorite franchises in the world. And I'm glad they do it every year.
Yeah, and I think I read something recently that there may have been some teases put out for perhaps a future game in the series.
I saw the blurry kind of background screenshots of what may be a new Mass Effect game, so that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. So
let's do the interview and come back and talk about some news, because we do have some news, some timely stuff that we should address. So
yeah,
hang out, listen to our chat with Alex, and then we'll be back with a little bit of news. Right, we are here with Alex Wilton-Regan, who BioWare fans may recognize as the voice of comm specialist Samantha Trainor in Mass Effect 3. And she's here to hang out and tell us all sorts of stories about her adventures and about her life. Thanks for coming, Alex. This is so awesome.
Hey, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me. I hope I've got some good adventures to tell you about.
I have to admit that the hardest thing for me was figuring out the time difference.
Yes.
I went
to the, is it where you are?
It's 3:30 here.
Okay, I think it's like 7:30 here then.
Yeah, but the thing that was crazy, and Scott is pretty much a genius, but we're on the edge of a daylight savings time here.
So you changed tonight.
We changed tonight, and I was using an online time zone calculator and like trying to, and I still couldn't. I'm like, I don't know what fucking time it is.
It's so confusing. We changed in the UK last weekend.
Okay.
And so I think we changed a week ahead of you guys, right?
Okay.
But the thing is, on the Sunday, I had to go in to you know what the BBC is, right? Obviously, yeah, you guys have music. So I had to go into BBC Radio 4 to do a radio play, a recording of something of a Russian classic called Eugene Onegin, and I was playing the lead girl. And then it suddenly hit me on the Saturday that on the Sunday it would no longer be the same time. And so what the fuck time was I actually due in the studio to record this? I was like, I have no idea. I'm either going to be at the BBC really late or really early. Whatever way this goes, this will probably end badly for
me. It's so damn funny.
It was just because I had to work. I got so frightened. Oh, it was terrible. It was terrible.
Right. Yeah, because I remember when you and I were setting this up, I kept looking at the time zone calculator. I'm like, okay, there's a 5-hour difference. And then today I got on, and it was only a 4-hour difference, and I'm like, what is happening? And I didn't realize you guys had already had daylight savings time.
We were right. It is actually 5 hours ahead, except for this week, and that's where we screwed up.
Yeah, yep. Okay. But we're here. And
we're still here.
That's all that matters.
Which is great. So we have a lot of questions to ask you, and again, thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Absolute pleasure.
We always like to start at the beginning, and you know, feel free to be as open as you want to be, but you've been acting for quite some time. When did you realize that you wanted to do this professionally, and what were some of your early experiences as an actor like?
Well, I always tell people that I remember torturing my family with a one-woman rendition of Sleeping Beauty at the age of 4 in my mother's living room. And I'm pretty certain that marked the moment where my parents went, oh no, she's going to want to act. So to be honest, I can't really remember a time where I didn't want to be an actress. I always loved acting. I always loved performing. I was really into dance and singing as well when I was younger. But I didn't necessarily know what being an actress was, if that makes sense. It was just something that I loved to do, almost like the way a kid might play football without fully understanding what a footballer is.
Mm-hmm.
So I always performed. And when I was old enough to realize that, you know, this could be a job, I begged my parents to let me go to stage school as a child. And they said, no, we shall have an education. And I said, no, don't educate me. Please.
It's like every kid's worst nightmare.
It's overrated.
It really is.
But thankfully, my wonderful parents did keep me in school. And I'm very grateful for that because they provided me with a wonderful education. And, you know, part of that education as a teenager was doing things like drama for A-level, which are the exams that you take here when you're 18, when you graduate from high school, mm-hmm. and English literature and French literature, and actually lots of great academic subjects that I got to do that kind of expanded my knowledge of theatre, drama, literature, the great writers and all the rest of it. So that was really cool. And then when I left... Oh, yeah, so back to my poor parents briefly. At 18, when you have to apply to university, if that's what you decide that you want to do, mm-hmm. I was, you know, my parents both went to university, and I'm the first grandchild in the family, and, you know, people want you to do the best, mm-hmm. and all of this. So everyone was like, oh, well, you've got to apply to uni, you've got to go to uni and stuff. And I was like, yeah, maybe, sort of half-heartedly did some applications, you know, got into like 3 or 4 universities and stuff. And then I think a week before my final exam started, I turned to my parents and I said, by the way, guys, just so you know, I've decided that if I get straight A's in my exams, then I'm not going to go to university because I will have proved that I'm smart enough to go to university, but instead I'm going to go to drama school.
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry, what?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So you want me to get straight A's. So the deal is if I get straight A's, I get to go to drama school. So,
wow.
And, that's yeah, fantastic. I got straight A's. So my backwards rationale, and you know, of course you can go to university, the multiple of grades, you certainly don't have to get straight A's, you can get B's and C's and D's and still go to university. But my sort of agreement with them was that I would have proven that I could go to university. But instead with the grades, I went to drama school, and I guess the rest, as they say, is history. In a nutshell, sort of. It was a very slow start, but
your parents were supportive once you made that decision, though they still had your back, they still supported your, or was it rough?
I would say that one of them has always believed in me and always said, you know, very much, you know, dream big, dream bigger, and is into sort of follow your dream, follow your heart, follow your passion. Because life's too short. And I think the other one is more practical, more grounded. And it's not that they didn't believe in me. It's just that as a parent, you want to protect your child. You know, you want to want to make sure that they have stability and security. And of course, I can understand that in their eyes, if you are, you know, able to go to university and provide yourself with some security, then, you know, why wouldn't you? To me, the logic was, if I go to university and if I get a degree, I will have something to fall back on. I will use that because I can be fundamentally quite lazy. So,
I think we all can.
Yeah. So I was like, well, if I have a degree to fall back on, I will fall back on that, you know? And I didn't want to allow myself that safety net, I guess. So yeah. I just worked very, very hard and pushed myself.
So what would your backup career be? What is the fallback?
None.
See, that's rough. That's kind of, I did the same thing though. I did the same thing. I went to school initially for like film and stuff, and I didn't really have any aspirations to be a teacher. That was the last thing. I mean, I kind of like you, school was not my thing. I was never wanted to be an educator. And then I started hearing like all these historical stories and, you know, hearing my dad tell historical stories all the time. And I was like, you know, I could get up there and tell stories. So it was a total shift for me. But that's interesting. You don't have a fallback. That's interesting.
Yeah, no, I don't have a fallback. I mean, I write more and more, and I've written 2 short films, and I've done some continuity writing for some TV channels, which was paid, and a few articles and things.
Cool.
And I'm writing a feature film at the moment, and I've done the outline for a second feature film. So I am writing more and more, sort of dipping my toe in the waters of production and producing. But that's a sort of, I think the producing aspect of me comes from just being very sort of determined to get things done and slightly bossy. So I just say, I can do that. Fine. You don't have to do it. I'll just do it. It's fine. Doesn't matter. And I think the writer in me is actually the side of the underused actress. It's the part of me as an actress that doesn't always feel fulfilled by the work that you get, because, you know, you can't necessarily, you know, you get, the jobs that an actor takes are very often, you know, the jobs that we get offered. And there are loads of actresses out there, and there are loads of very talented actresses out there, and there are loads of amazingly talented actresses out there who are, you know, a few steps further ahead in their career than me. So I'm still at the stage where a lot of what I get offered, I end up taking just because I want to work and I want the experience of it. You know, you say no occasionally. Absolutely. Of course you do. But there's a side of me that's desperate to get to the best scripts, the best directors, the best producers. And because I'm not quite there yet, it's helpful to write, because then I can put that creative energy, I can channel that into them. Does that make sense?
No, sorry, totally, my makes sense. Absolutely.
I'm being really boring and rambling.
No, I think it makes a lot of sense, because I mean, what you're doing is so incredibly challenging. And that actually kind of segues well into the next question I was going to ask. In terms of the roles you have taken, without naming any of the names, of course, of projects, because I know they can get you in trouble. What are some of the hardest things you've had to do as an actor so far?
The hardest ones. There've been loads of really hard. Unfortunately for me, I'm one of these terrible actresses who, when they get a job, first of all, you really want the job, and then you actually get the job. I get really excited for like 3 hours and I turn around and I go, oh my God, I can't do this. This is huge. I can't do this. I mean, I said this to my boyfriend the other day about a project that I've just finished. And he went, but darling, you say that every time. Every time you act, you say this is the most difficult, painful, challenging, you know, project. But thinking specifically about projects, they're challenging in different ways. A project can be challenging if you are playing multiple characters in the same piece, for example. And at that point, it feels like it can feel like a challenge to your talent, if that makes sense. So you really want to create, you know, 3 or 4 very different, very distinct characters that the audience will be able to believe and invest in each character. And then you have a fear, of course, that perhaps you haven't done enough, perhaps you haven't invested enough. You know, there's a personal fear. Certainly, I had to play a prostitute recently in a film that I just wrapped. And, you know, there was a personal fear about wearing a skimpy dress on a set full of men. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I bet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know,
you go, oh, my God, my ass is fucking huge. So you have the personal fears of like, you know, my fat, the personal fears of, I'm not talented. Then you have the fears of, then you have actually, you know, from doing the work, you can do something that's incredibly emotionally wrenching, you know, grief, fear, death, anything. Does that make sense?
No, it makes sense. And to make you feel better, if they made me do anything in clothes I wasn't comfortable in, I don't think I could do it at all. Honestly, like if I had to like conduct an interview or even teach in something I wasn't comfortable in, it's hard because you want to feel very confident when you're speaking in front of people. So the last thing you want is to be wearing, you know, a skimpy outfit, right?
No, I mean, to the costume designer's credit, she did do a brilliant job. The problem was I just, as Alex, you know, was like, oh God, if I move even a centimeter to the right, they're going to see my bum. So, you know, but from the pictures I've seen, it hopefully, touch wood, you know, that's me touching wood, by the way, touch wood, everything will be okay. Yeah. Oh, and also, sorry, there's one more story to add to your question about Absolutely. The hardest thing is, do you have a tendency to injure myself on set?
Really?
In fact, several producers will confirm this. When I did World of the Dead, The Zombie Diaries 2, I ended up in hospital. And when I did RPG, which was recently released with Rutger Hauer, I also ended up in hospital. Yes.
How does that happen?
It's because I get very, very, very in the moment, and I get very heightened emotionally, and then I just sort of throw myself about. In RPG, there's a which stands for Real Playing Game, which is the film that was just released with Rutger Hauer. There's a scene where I have to run down a corridor, and I'm running away from someone, and I'm in fear of my life. So, you know, before we went for a take, I was standing there, kind of like psyching myself up. In fact, I think I was like punching the air, so I was like, huh, 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 like really working myself up. And they go, action, and I just bolted down the corridor, tripped, fell, smashed into a wall, okay? But the best thing was the corridor was empty, so no one saw anything.
Oh, no.
All I had was, Alex, and I would go, oh my God, I'm bleeding! And then, you know, 50 people come out, and it's like, we've killed the actress. No, the actress has killed herself. In the name
of God. Oh no.
The real question is, did they use those takes? Because then it'd be worth it.
I don't think they did.
Oh, that's a bummer.
I know. They couldn't use them because, of course, the whole point was I wasn't supposed to fall. It's like I ruined that and, you know, delayed filming. I'm such a numpty. No one's ever going to hire me again. Story.
Well, like, let it never be said that you don't give 110% to every performance.
There you go.
Absolutely.
To every performance. That's part of the problem, I've been told. So, So yeah.
Well, let's shift gears and we'll talk about a different type of challenge. You've been working with BioWare now for quite some time. How did you first get involved with them to work on their titles as a voice actress?
Well, I got involved with them years ago on I guess it was either Dragon Age 1. Yeah, because they've only done two, haven't they? Yeah. So it would have been the first Dragon Age. And I went in to, I just signed with a voiceover agency and they sent me on an audition to a company called Side, who are the people that record a lot of the Dragon Age voices for in the UK. Does that make sense?
Sorry, absolutely.
So when BioWare want to record people in the UK, they often use Side, who are a studio. And so I went in and I auditioned, didn't have a clue what I was doing, and got the job for some complete unbeknownst reason to me. And I'm pretty sure that Dragon Age was one of my first computer games that I ever did. I mean, it was so early on in my voiceover career. And so I didn't realize, I didn't even know who BioWare were, which is embarrassing. I didn't realize how big they were. I didn't know anything about Dragon Age. I didn't know anything about, you know, Mass Effect or any of their franchise games. I didn't know who Side were. Basically, I didn't know anything. I knew absolutely nothing. And I got the job in the first Dragon Age, and I went in and I did a couple of roles for them. And had no idea if I'd done a good job or a bad job. But then they invited me back for the second one, which was brilliant. Because then awesome. I was like, oh, okay, maybe I was all right at this voice. And then, you know, blessings of blessings, they gave me Samantha Trainor for Mass Effect 3, absolutely. Which was clearly completely, you know, phenomenal. And by that time, I was a little bit further into my voiceover career. I was a bit more established. I knew who people were, and I knew that they were absolutely huge.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't believe I'm doing this. This is ridiculous. And then, you know, talking to people about, you know, BioWare, Mass Effect, Dragon Age, all that kind of stuff, and people going, that's amazing. And I was like, yeah, I think it kind of is actually.
That's great. So when you transitioned into voice acting, what were some of the hurdles you kind of had to jump over, and what are some of the changes you had to make as an actor when you started doing voice work for stuff like BioWare?
I don't really think I made a huge amount of changes, actually. I think that for me, the kind of actor I am is, you know, sort of going back to the stories about when I injure myself on set as well, as I am an actor. It's like 110% to every performance that I do. And what I love about voice acting is it's a medium which not only allows you to give 110%, it wants you to give 110%. Voice acting wants you to give 110% of, you know, the best emotional qualities in you so that they literally manifest in your voice, so that they translate into action and thought into the microphone, and so that when someone's listening to it on the other end, they go, oh, I know what she was thinking there. Oh, no, he was lying. Mm. Oh, no, but that's not the truth. Because do you know what I mean? It's that, oh, well, she's trying to seduce him now. Do you see what I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely.
When you look at a film, for example, you have everything working in your favor, and that, you know, you have a costume department, you have a makeup department, you have a, you know, the music going over the top. You have so many things contributing to the performance. If you're in a period piece, then the set will look like a period piece. But I just love the fact that in voiceovers, it's literally all about your internal process as an actor coming out and literally being manifested as, you know, words, sounds, vocals, whatever. And that translates. So for me, it's, I've been very lucky that it's just something I really enjoy. And, you know, I'm very, very lucky that it seems to enjoy having me back. Enjoys having me back. Sorry, I just mean.
No, I know what you mean. BioWare likes to hire the same actors over and over again, because I feel like they do develop a relationship, a working relationship with their with their cast. And I think it's awesome they brought you back. Were you expecting Trainor to become as popular as she was? I mean, because she was essentially, you know, a supporting cast member, but people really love this character. Like, I go to conventions all the time for the site, and there's people dressed up as her all the time. So what is that like as an actor, seeing someone that you've portrayed kind of being idolized in a lot of ways?
It's completely amazing, and it's deeply, deeply humbling, you know, as kind of little old me who started out with a one-woman rendition of Sleeping Beauty in her living room, you know, at the age of four.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's deeply humbling, because I think one of the things that I'm very, not bad at, but I'm not very aware, just as an individual, of necessarily how high profile some of the projects are that I've done, or the people that I work with, because I find that for me personally, that can actually make me feel quite frightened. Like, if I knew how big the Mass Effect franchise was before I'd done it, I would have gone into the studio with a lot of nerves. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily in my interest to know how big something is before I go in for it. I remember once I auditioned for Pirates of the Caribbean 4. And when I found out that it was like Pirates of the Caribbean 4 with Johnny Depp, I just gave the worst audition of my life. I was like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't possibly act with Johnny Depp because he's a proper actor, you know? but that is what you feel like. Yeah. So
I think Johnny Depp would psych most people out, though. I don't.
That's true.
That would be a really rough one.
Actors in the Mass Effect franchise, you know. Mm-hmm. So for me, it would have just scared me. But having post done Mass Effect 3 and post Trainor, going to the conventions and meeting some of the fans has been absolutely gorgeous, and connecting with them via Twitter has been amazing. And also, you know, it's been really nice for me meeting people, you know, particularly of like the lesbian and gay community, come up and talk to me and be like, it was so cool to have a gay character.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And
let's talk about that for a second. So Patrick Weeks, who we are buddies with just through the site, who's just a brilliant, funny, awesome
guy.
Fabulous.
I adore him so much.
He's hilarious. He's just a hilarious guy. But when he wrote Samantha Trainor, he was very subtle about her sexuality. It was never as if there was a spotlight on her sexuality at all. It was almost as if it was a non-issue. And I think that's what a lot of people in the LGBTQ community really identified with, is the fact that she was a lesbian, but it wasn't ever really a thing. So when you were reading Trainor really for the first time, did you even notice that?
I think I was the last person to know.
Oh, really?
She was kept back. It's like, certainly when I auditioned for it, I don't remember being told that she was gay. I think maybe someone said that she was potentially going to be a love interest for Shepard, but this was in the very early stages of the development of the character, so I don't know whether that was decided or not. Obviously, as the recording progressed, I was like, oh, yeah, so she's like really gay. Like, she doesn't go with the male Shepard, like, at all, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, fair dues. I mean, my point is, I'm always pro just having strong, independent female characters who sort of stand in their own right, as opposed to in relationship to a male character.
Yeah, absolutely.
If that makes sense.
No, it totally makes sense.
So for me, that was the coolest thing about Sam, not particularly that she was gay. I mean, I don't, you know, for me as an actor, I don't care one way or the other, but from what I've heard, there aren't a lot of gay characters in computer games.
No, it's so true. Yeah.
That felt very cool. That was when I was like, okay, this is a real honor to actually be doing this and to be representing that and, you know, hopefully do it justice. But I completely stand in support of Patrick's writing of the character, because we've all got lesbian and gay and bisexual and potentially transgender friends. Like, they don't walk about going, hi, my name's Tom, by the way, I'm a homosexual.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, obviously not. They're just people, and their sexuality is their sexuality and their own business. But it doesn't necessarily come into it shouldn't necessarily be a thing,
yeah,
unless
absolutely.
That's a character choice. doesn't make sense. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah, it totally makes sense.
The depth of Trainor's character goes far beyond her sexuality. And I think that,
yeah,
you know, the combination of the writing and the performance you deliver, she just feels very human. Like when you talk to her, even though she's just a digital character in a video game, when she's talking mm-hmm. about all these very like particular things like her antihistamines and stuff like that, she just like she has like a very
neurotic. I love it, she's so neurotic.
Yeah, she just has this very like humanness about her.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
Yeah, no, she's amazingly human, and I think for me that's, I mean, I cannot stress how grateful I am to the voiceover world and the gaming world for like accepting me and bringing me in, and the directors that I've worked with and who keep rehiring me, and the producers and the writers and companies like BioWare. You know, I'm just so grateful to them because they allow me as an actress a creative outlet that if I was just doing, you know, film and theater and TV, I would not be getting as much of a creative experience, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've always said that if one day I ever win a Best Actress Oscar, God willing, touch wood, let's touch some more wood in my superstitious way. You know, I swear one of the communities I'm going to thank is the voiceover world, because they've not only kept me sane, but they've kept me employed, you know, and it's just absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, I get as much job satisfaction by doing a week's worth of voice acting in computer games as I do on a film set, because it's acting. You're living, breathing and creating characters. There's nothing, you know, more satisfying than that as an actor.
Absolutely.
You just want to perform.
Yeah, that's really awesome to hear, actually. You mentioned earlier that you have been to conventions and such, and you've met some fans. Do you have any of those experiences that stand out in particular? Any of those that are kind of special to you?
The good ones or the bad ones?
Both. I want to hear the bad ones too.
BioWare fans are very passionate, and I know that they like you. They really like you.
So one of my favorite fans was a woman who came up to me and gave me a bottle of homemade perfume labeled Trainor, and Trainor's perfume is made of honey and Earl Grey tea. Those are like the base notes of the perfume.
I'm sorry, I'm just imagining your face as you're receiving really this.
I was there with Ali Hillis.
Oh, were and, you? We love her.
Taylor at the time. Uh-huh. And we were there together, and they'd already been given their perfumes. And so I turned and I looked at them and I was like, is this normal? And they went, yeah, she does that to everyone. And I was like, okay, thank you so much. That's really nice of you. Thank you for my perfume. And I smelt it. And to her credit, it was rather nice. I keep it upstairs in my little box of acting work. So I have that. That was lovely. And then meeting people who were kind of approached for an autograph or a picture, and who are very shy, but then they sort of come out of their shell when they start, when you start talking to them, and when they start talking to you, that's completely lovely, because they're very like, I don't know what to say. And I'm like, well, how are you? You know, thank you so much for waiting. And it's just nice to give something back to them, because at the end of the day, they're the ones who've, you know, bought the game and effectively kept me in employment, you know, so I feel very grateful for that. Slightly odd one was,
I can't wait to hear this one, I'm excited.
Two young men came up to me.
It was not Scott and I, by the way.
No, it was not us.
It was the two young men who came up to me at a convention and approached and sort of hunched over the desk. I'm going to try and make it sound creepy and weird to imitate what happened. And they basically, okay, I'm going to do some sound effects. Okay, they went, hi, I brought my towel. Can you sign my towel for me, please? And I was like, I'm sorry, what? And he throws down this graying, like damp, sports towel, okay, like it looks like a hand towel type of thing, in front of me on the desk. All I'm gonna say is it was not white anymore, it was stained.
Oh.
It was pleasant, okay. And I just looked at it and I was like, I'm really sorry. I think I might have said something ridiculous like, I'm not allowed to sign that. What I really meant was, please get that the hell away from me.
Yeah. But then I did say,
would you like a signed photo instead? Because I was feeling generous. But no, that was just clearly, you know, teenage boys. It would be fun to be really gross.
That is an amazing story.
I hope that guy listens to this interview and reaches out to us because I want to know his perspective on the towel story.
I don't know if you want to know what was on the towel.
I don't.
I was like, yeah, no, that was odd. That was odd. There are also people. The only thing I find strange is when people come up to me and they go, "Hi, can I have an autograph?" And I go, "Yeah, of course you can." And they go, "So who are you?
What have you done? What?
Who's the character?" Because then that's what I don't understand. It's like, why would you want an autograph from someone who you don't know? I don't understand that at all.
It happens all the time. It's so strange. Like at Comic-Con, people will line up for hours and they don't even know what they're in line for.
So then I have to say to them, oh, this is a picture of a character called Samantha Trainor who was in a thing called Mass Effect. Oh, no, you haven't heard of Mass Effect. Okay, well, it's a computer game. Do you know what I mean? That I find very odd.
Those are great stories. Has anyone asked you to pose with a toothbrush yet?
No. Why has no one asked me to do that?
I know. I think if we ever see you, we're going to have you do that.
Because absolutely.
It'll make us incredibly happy to have you with a magical biotic toothbrush.
That is such a standout moment.
It is. Yeah. I love that scene so much. It was so good.
So did you guys both play the game?
Oh yeah. Many times.
We played the living heck out of the game. We fell in love with it so much, and that's why if you look through our what we've done for the site, there's so much Mass Effect stuff because we're just huge fans. We're like, hey, let's just have everybody on and talk about Mass Effect.
Oh my gosh. We have some questions from Twitter. Ash, why don't you get us started?
Let's start with Sam Nee, who's at Eating Green Eggs on Twitter. And she was just wondering if you had any favorite trainer scenes that you did from Mass 3 or any of the DLC. What were some of your favorite scenes?
One that I really remember enjoying was, I think it was the goodbye scene with Shepard. And it may have been a goodbye scene or it may have been it was one of the more emotional ones where Sam sort of says, you know, I want the house and the white picket fence and the dog. Like, that's what I want. Mm. And I really liked recording that. I think it was emotionally, it was very poignant. And also I really enjoyed it for political reasons. I firmly believe in gay marriage, and I felt very proud of BioWare for putting that sort of an idea into a game as big as Mass Effect. Does that make sense? Like,
no,
taking it out into the wider world, you know, the idea that, you know, gay people should be allowed to marry and, you know, can now marry in the UK and in various parts of the States and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I felt very, very proud that they had put that in a game. And I felt very honored to be the one delivering those words. And so I really wanted to do them justice. And so it did actually become a very emotional moment, that goodbye bit. I also enjoyed recording some of the later stuff, which was the later releases. So after Mass Effect, the stuff at the party where she gets
the Citadel. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Citadel stuff was just really fun and funny. I really liked. And I think one of the reasons I liked it is because Patrick walked into one of the recording sessions, and having done Sam's bits, I did some other smaller female voices. Mm-hmm. And so I started doing like I did like a real like Valley Girl one, and like I can't even really remember like where she comes, but she was just like really annoying type of thing. And
that's
then
incredible. That's so good.
Thank you. But so Patrick apparently walks in to the recording and says the director, like, who is that? And she goes, that's Alex. And he goes, no, but who's that doing the LA voice? And the lady goes, yeah, that's Alex Wilton-Regan. And he's like, what? shut the fuck up. So I really enjoyed that I got to kind of pull the wool over Patrick's eyes, basically, in place.
Oh, that's awesome.
That was a lot of fun. And I also enjoy the shouting stuff and the kind of high action stuff, you know, like we're being attacked or like we need to get to the bays or something like that. But yeah, no, it was cool. But some of the stuff they wrote in terms of the really long technical stuff was really hard to say. I needed a million takes on some of the words that they wanted to say. Something like GUI interface exchanges with the something something. Yes.
Oh yeah. She's a total nerd. I love her.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we are fans. Yeah.
I wanted to take her out as part of my squad and I wanted her like on my team.
I would love to do that. I'm so game. If ever they make a Mass Effect 4 and if ever there is even the smallest chance that Sam has survived, I think she should come back as a warrior.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
Hard suited and booted, definitely.
I will take you with me. This is incredible.
Yes.
let's make this happen.
Listening, you heard it here first. There's demand for Sam to be a warrior and to go suited and booted with the shepherds. There we go.
That would be awesome.
That would be amazing.
Justin Banks, who is at Midtown 583, he does not have a question, but he has a thank you. He says, thank you for letting me know whenever I have a new text message. So apparently you are his new text message warning.
That must be the one with the there are private messages for you, Commander, or something like that. Uh-huh. You're welcome. It's an absolute pleasure. He's very welcome.
That's awesome. We have a signature question that we ask all of our guests that come on, and it's pretty simple. It's about your nerdy hobbies and your nerdy passions, and we use the term nerd very, very loosely. It just means that you're into something a whole lot, and you don't care what people think. But do you have anything that you collect or anything that you're really passionate about that's almost a secret, but you'll tell us anyway.
I'm trying to think.
I know it's a hard one.
I'm trying to think. No, but also I put it all on Twitter, so I'm not sure what is secret nowadays. It's like that's nerdy or vaguely secret like that.
It could even be something that you're nerdy about. It doesn't have to be sort of in the normal spectrum.
I think I drive my friends mad with my constant sort of political ramblings and sort of left-wing, slightly socialist-y. I'm constantly sending out, you know, here's a petition to save the tiger, here's a petition to stop, you know, torture in blah, blah, blah. Mm. So the really serious ones versus, you know, the slightly more obscure ones like, can we stop the, I don't even know, but I definitely know that I'm very sort of, there are lots of charities that I personally support and lots of human rights organizations that I'm very much behind. And I'm constantly posting things on Twitter and Facebook about petitions that need signing. And I really believe that if anyone's interested in that, things like avaz.org, I think that's how you pronounce it, and change.org, are fantastic websites which have very important petitions on, which often do lead to, you know, a successful outcome. You know, these aren't sort of blind petitions that you're signing that go nowhere. What I love about these websites, Avaz and Change, is that they email you when the petition has been successful to sort of give you an update. So then you go, actually, my signature and my voice did make a difference. So that's really cool. I'm a big yoga bunny. I'm big into my yoga.
And you were just doing that today, right?
I was doing that today.
You say you had somebody come in and like all covered with blood from Halloween.
I'm not even kidding you. I was in a downward dog, which if you don't know what that is, look it up. It's a downward dog. It's like an upside down thing. And I turn my head to the right and my neighbor's arms are covered in blood. I was like, what the fuck? And then I realized, of course, it was fake blood from yesterday, Halloween. That was very funny. So I'm big into my yoga. Okay, here's something slightly nerdy I can give you. One of the first questions I ask, I shouldn't really say this. Not only is this one of the first questions I ask people, but one of the determining factors sometimes about whether I will work with a fellow creative. Sorry, this is really bad.
I love this already.
This is already great.
Is based on their star sign. So,
really?
So I signed with my new agent, I signed with a different acting agency about a year ago. I moved to an agency called United. And I went in and I had a coffee with this fantastic, very dynamic, amazing agent called Charlotte Davies. And I love her and I love working with her. But a year ago, before I signed with her, I went in and I had a coffee with her on the couch and stuff. And it was all going really well. And she said, you know, so do you have anything that you really want to ask me? You know, like, I want this to be a two-way thing and I want us to be honest. So is there anything you need to know about me or from me? And I said, yeah, actually, there is something quite important. And I look her square in the eye and I go, what star sign are you? and she replies, a Gemini. I went, oh, that's fine. That's fabulous. We'll be great together. We're going to work great together. This is going to be the start of a good thing, Charlotte. I can feel it. So I do always ask people their star sign. And I can read. What signs are you guys, actually?
I know. I was really nervous. I'm a Gemini, I'm too.
Are you Gemini?
I'm okay.
Gemini. Oh, shit. Here I go. I'm a Taurus. Do I get to pass?
Taurus. Yeah. One of my best friends is a Taurus.
Okay.
Whew.
So which ones are the bad ones? What are the bad ones?
Exactly. No. This isn't the bad star signs. It's just about knowing certain traits that you will work better with. So, for example, I'm an Aquarius and Gemini is an air sign along mm-hmm. with Libra. So Aquarius, Gemini, Libra, we're air signs, so we tend to work very well together. And we sort of live in the realms of art and ideas and those kind of things. Taurus tends to, it's an earth sign, so it tends to be more down to earth, more practical. Taurians can be very into aesthetics, so, you know, visuals and how things look and things like that. It's just about knowing, you know, oh, okay, if I'm working with, you know, a Sagittarius, then they're probably going to be very out there and gregarious. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of high energy around versus, you know, if I'm being directed by a Cancer, then they tend to be more sensitive, more emotional, you know, a lot of water. So
it's really cool. So have you found that to be pretty valid in your work, like normally?
Yes,
That's cool. That's really cool.
And my favorite party trick is when I can guess when I say to someone, oh, you're a Capricorn, aren't you? And they go, oh my God, how did you know? But I mean, you know, star signs go, in my opinion, you know, a lot of people disagree with it, but star signs are actually, when we say star sign, for example, like, you know, Scott being a Gemini or you, Ash, being a Taurus or me being an Aquarius, actually those are our sun signs. So you don't know a whole lot about a person necessarily by where the sun is when they were born. You also need to know where their moon was and their rising. Sorry, I'm going into see. I'm
no, it's bigger. Really cool. I wish I knew more about this. It's awesome.
It's the external face that one presents to the world is their sun sign, normally, traditionally. But you might have a very dominant moon. So my moon sign is Leo, and I think that's where I get my extrovert acting personality. Does that make sense?
No, it totally makes sense. And you answered the question exactly how we hoped you would.
Uh-huh.
So. Good. We love hearing like strange and exciting things about our guests. Like, for instance, Courtney, who you mentioned. Courtney, she collects floaty pens.
And oh, that's cool.
And Allie talked about her dog rescue, which she does all the time. And I think Jen Hale talked about fitness. Was her big thing. She's like a huge fitness buff. So.
Outdoors person.
Yeah, she's an outdoorsy person. So we love
her. She looks good on it, man. We've seen photos. She looks good. Like, so yeah.
Absolutely. So what other projects do you have going on right now that you're actually allowed to talk about? Because we know there's some in the works that you're not allowed, but are there any things happening that you're allowed to plug?
Yes. Well, if anyone is UK-based, because I think you have to be in the UK to hear it, there is... I just finished playing Tatiana in Eugene Onegin for BBC Radio 4, which is going to be airing the week of the 26th of November, if anyone wants to listen out for that. It's a very good, it's an updated version of the play. So it's going to be on BBC Radio 4. And then, okay, that's one thing. I think there's like, I'm trying to think, the NDAs are so stringent on computer. I call them computer games. I sound like my grandmother, don't I? Video games, right? Not computer games.
You can call them whatever you want.
But it just sounds more sophisticated when you say it. So
it does.
I go with it.
Yeah.
What would you guys call them? Video games, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to be cool, man. I'm going to be hip. So I'm going to call them video games. But basically, yes, all of the video games that I've done recently, unfortunately, are all NDA to the hilt. So that's to say. But just, you know, You can follow me on Twitter, which is, I think, Alex Wilton Regan. Yeah, that's my name. That's obvious. So you can follow me on Twitter, Alex Wilton Regan. Or I have a Facebook fan page, which is also Alex Wilton Regan. And I normally will post something on there about a play if people are in London, or TV episodes, or, you know, the upcoming voice work and stuff. So, yeah.
Cool.
What about any convention appearances or just in-person appearances planned? Do you have any plans like that in the near future?
I haven't been asked. It's really sad.
Really?
Yeah, it's so sad.
We would love, like, there must be a way to get you to PAX East. That's in Boston. Yeah. That's not impossible.
I'd so love to do it. Listen, I'm so up for any of this. So if anyone does want to get in touch, please do. I would
absolutely. We'll put in the good word to get you out there, because we'd love to hang out. It's April 2014, so we'll try and get you out there to hang out with us.
Yeah, yeah. No, and also that is the hugely rewarding thing that I found about these conventions is meeting the fans. You know, that was like, it was the biggest. It was just the biggest trip to, like, meet these people who actually really like your work and are willing to come up and talk to you about it. Does that make sense?
No, it totally makes sense. Absolutely.
So I'm all for that. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, hopefully we can poke the right people and get you out there and, you know, come hang out in Boston. And
sounds fantastic. I'd love to.
Have some fun. It'll be awesome. Well, thank you so much for hanging out. I mean, it was a really good time, and hopefully, hopefully you come back and hang out again.
When you are allowed to talk about other things that you cannot currently talk about,
yes,
then we certainly need to have you back.
I think between you and me, there may be some projects of interest to the listeners,
we want to hear.
but maybe we'll see. They
to
might
be continued.
Hate them. But yes, hopefully they'll love them. So yeah, awesome. No, thank you so much for asking.
Thank you so much, Alex.
And also a big shout out to Natalie, who organized this. And
yeah.
Thank you very much for that, Natalie.
We love Natalie. Thanks, Natalie. Yeah.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
Okay, guys, thank you so much for checking out our chat with Alex. We really hope to have her back on the show soon, and we hope to see her at PAX East. We were kind of hinting at that during our chat with her, that we want to find some way to get her out there so we can, you know, hang out and maybe do another interview out in Boston this year. So
internet campaign.
Internet campaign to get Alex all the way to the United States so that she can hang out with us.
But across the pond.
Absolutely. She was so much fun. Such a trooper. A lot of great stories. And, you know,
she was awesome. I'm glad that our signs are compatible with hers as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Our star signs.
I was nervous during the interview. I'm like, oh man, what if she and I have opposite star signs? And as soon as I tell her that I'm a Taurus, then she'll be like, you need to get the fuck away from me.
Yeah, no, she got me off the hook right away. I was comfortable. I felt better about it.
News.
Absolutely. So let's talk for a couple minutes about some news before we get out of here. The first little bit of news I was really excited about. Marvel actually just inked a deal with Netflix to bring 4 exclusive shows to Netflix starting in 2015.
That's insane. What are these shows going to be about? How can you do 4 separate shows?
It's crazy. So they're kind of going with the same formula as Orange is the New Black, meaning they're going to dump all the episodes on Netflix at once. But they're doing something very Marvel. So all 4 series are going to tie together, mm-hmm. and they're all kind of the dark and gritty Marvel characters. So the first one that's going to be out is going to be about Daredevil.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so okay. It'll be Daredevil fighting crime in Hell's Kitchen. So more than likely his origin story and, you know, about his life fighting crime. And then you have Jessica Jones, who's Detective Jessica Jones. Iron Fist and Luke Cage. So those are the 4 series. And the really cool thing, each series is going to have about 13 episodes beginning in 2015. And when all of them are done, it's going to turn into a Defenders series that has all the characters in it.
Wow.
So you have 4 miniseries, and then once the miniseries are all over, you're going to have the Defenders, which is about that superhero team with Luke Cage, Iron Fist, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, all fighting crime. And they say it's kind of up in the air at this point, but they're saying that the Defenders is going to be an ongoing series for Netflix. So,
well, let me, I have two things to say about this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Three, actually. One, this is awesome. Really excited about that.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Right.
Two, it's crazy that it's coming just to Netflix. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like we are now in the future. And three, if something like this can happen for Marvel, maybe it can also happen for Star Wars.
Right.
Can you imagine?
No, I mean,
just like a little 14 episode series about, I don't know, Admiral Akbar or something. Yeah. Somebody like this.
Salacious Crumb, the miniseries.
Yeah, exactly. Just, the musical.
Yeah. Eating trash and like making horrible sounds.
I would just watch even the Cantina Band, you know. Yeah.
I would definitely watch a Cantina Band miniseries.
Exactly.
It would be like that thing you do.
Maybe they could be on tour. Like they just go to different planets and
oh my God.
Play
you
gigs.
Don't sell this idea. I mean, or you should sell this idea. Don't give this idea away. Is what
you heard it
say.
Here first. Yeah. Trademark.
Cantina Band.
Yeah.
What was that band called? Max Rebo and the...
Well, I think there were two bands. I think there was Max Rebo, right. And then there was the other band, just of all. I think they're Bith is what the race is called, I think.
Yeah, yeah, the ones with the horrible mouths.
Yeah, and they just play like the those wind instruments, I guess.
Yeah, brass. Yeah. I guess the other bit of big news this week is about the good old PS4, and Scott knows a lot about that. So.
Yeah, so I think when you guys will be listening to this podcast, you will be just a few short days away from the release of the PS4. Sony has released even more news in advance of the release. Notably, that apparently that the PS4 will ship with a $10 PlayStation Store voucher, which I'm assuming is U.S. only, but maybe other countries as well. It's gonna have 11 entertainment apps at launch, but neither PS4 or Xbox have HBO Go right away. Which I think is a bummer for some people, but your other apps are there. Your Amazon, Hulu, Netflix, your Netflix, your Hulu, like all that stuff will be there. And then PS4 increased your capacity to 2,000 friends on a friends list, which is like, sure, what, you know what I mean? Like, okay.
Wow.
Hooray, said minor internet celebrities.
Yeah, yeah. I think they're like overestimating how many of us actually talk to each other out in the world, unless you are, like you said, a minor internet celebrity.
I think I have less than maybe 40 friends in my friends list.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not very popular.
I don't have any.
I have no friends.
No friends.
So there you go. PS4 is coming out. Sure, everybody's really excited.
Yeah, I'm actually getting it on launch, and
I had no idea.
Yeah, well, it's not something I care to talk about. No, I'm getting it on launch because I figured I was gonna get it eventually, and I'm like, why not get it now, you know, just mm-hmm. to get it kind of out of the way. I think the only title I'm getting with it is Killzone. I don't know why I'm getting Killzone.
It's the exclusive launch title, if you will.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So
might as well play it.
It's either that or Knack, and you know how much I love those kind of cartoony, platformy type games.
Can't you buy Killzone right now? Can't you go to the store like today and pick it up?
I think you can. I know friend of the podcast, Derek, already has his PS4 version of Call of Duty in his hands with no PS4. So, I mean, you can actually go out to the stores right now and get your PS4 games.
Crazy.
It is. It's the beginning, so... Pretty exciting stuff.
I'm excited, man. Just the news for both. I think it's going to be a great time for gamers. It's going to be a good holiday season.
Speaking of good season and good times.
Hey.
How's the NAFL going for you?
NAFL's going great. Here's your quick NAFL update. I am now in first place.
What? What did you do? What witchcraft did you
And then there are 7 other teams in the league, as I like to say.
They are all losers and you are the winner.
I am the winner. Let's see what happened last week. I demolished, actually, it was a matchup of first and second place. So I demolished Rex's Warriors 164-97.
I don't know what that means, but it sounds good.
That's usually in fantasy football. Most teams, like 100 points is kind of your benchmark. So
yeah.
If you have one of those blockbuster weeks where you score, you know, 150 plus, it's kind of when all the stars align for you.
Nice.
But that put me firmly into first place, and I will keep a stranglehold on this first place and demolish this league.
Nice.
Matt is in 7th place, second to last.
Man. He's going to have to crawl his way out of that well with all those Ringus and come yeah. fight back.
It's the Ringus that were keeping him down. That's why he's that's why he's stuck. He's cursed.
Too many
right
Ringu
now.
Hugs. Absolutely.
So there you go.
Awesome.
So I think that brings us to the end of today's show. I want to give a welcome to any new listeners that we may have that just kind of came for the Alex Wilton Regan interview. I would like to let you ladies and gentlemen know that we have a bunch of interviews with other BioWare relevant people in previous podcasts, including Jennifer Hale and Ali Hillis. So we would encourage you to seek out and listen to those podcast interviews as well.
Yeah, they're all over the place. And we have all sorts of people like David Gator and mm-hmm. Courtney Taylor. Mm-hmm. And we had Mike Gamble on. Mm-hmm. And, I don't know. We love talking to these folks because we are huge fans. So,
and if you're fans of other things, we've talked to other people too.
That's true as well.
Yeah,
that is true. What in your opinion is our most bizarre and obscure interview? Would be Michael Biehn.
That was a good one. Yeah, that was
a good one. That's probably our strangest in a good way is Michael Biehn from Terminator and Aliens. So look that one up.
Yeah, that was a great one. I don't think I was prepared, but
I wasn't prepared.
He was up to the challenge. He definitely stepped up to the challenge.
Yeah. One day we'll release the deleted scenes from that one.
I don't think
so. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to episode 128 of the Reddit NA podcast. You can find us on Twitter, and that's at Nerd Appropriate. We have a pretty awesome community of fun people there. So chat with us on Twitter. You can email us directly, and that's Matt, Hillary with one L, Scott, or Ash at nerdappropriate.com. You can find us on Facebook, and that's /NerdAppropriate on Facebook. And, pretty much if you go into Google and you type Nerd Appropriate, we have a couple other strange things that we do, like the Nerd Appropriate Car Wash and the Nerd Appropriate Thong Manufacturing Company.
Wow, these are things that I don't even know about.
Yeah, but they exist.
That's amazing. Maybe I would also tell people to go to BioWareBase.NerdAppropriate.com for PAX panel coverage.
Yeah,
of I think prior BioWare bases.
The effect of what 21 panels that we did total.
Yeah, a lot of stuff out there.
Yeah, so we record stuff and put it on the internet that you can listen to.
Yeah, so curl up with Nerd Appropriate and tuck into Rated NA.
Ooh, that's. I'm glad you thought of that, Scott.
You like that? It's a callback for our old listeners.
There you go.
All right.
See you guys later.
See ya. Ready?
Yep.
Oh, I forgot what to say. Okay, I got it. Okay. Here we go.
All right.